You know how important it is to ensure that your supplements are genuine, safe, and effective. That's why I partnered with Fullscript, an online dispensing platform that only offers curated professional-grade brands I know and trust, the very same supplements that I prescribe to my patients and take myself. Never counterfeit or expired, always stored and shipped correctly. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to start your free Fullscript account. Buying through Fullscript offers fast shipping, optional refill reminders, a mobile-friendly site. It's safe, secure, and HIPAA-compliant and offers world-class support. Fullscript also gives you access to my custom-targeted supplement protocols that combine the products that I recommend to address specific needs, heart health, immune support, and much more. Just go to DearHoffmanStore.com to sign up for your free Fullscript account. You'll get access to the supplements and features you need to help you achieve your wellness goals. That's DearHoffmanStore.com. DearHoffmanStore.com. Welcome back to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, and we're endeavoring to answer your questions. Questions come to questions at drhoffman.net. What's in the mailbag, Layla?
Okay, we've got an email from Sandy. I've been listening to you for years, and I know that you've been informing us about new things, so I'm asking if you would talk about this product. It's called Serizin. S-E-R-E-Z-I-N. Mm-hmm. It's got a synergistic complex of Boswellia and Zingiber officinal, which is mm-hmm. ginger.
Yeah.
It helps with pain and sleep.
Mm.
What do you think of a product like this?
Well, you know, I understand the name because Sarah, you know, it's like serenity, and Zin
yes.
is from the botanical name for ginger, Zingiber, you know, officinalis. Mm-hmm. And certainly is anti-inflammatory because ginger is anti-inflammatory and Boswellia yeah. is anti-inflammatory. So I guess mm-hmm. I don't know about the sleep claim. I guess if you're less in pain, I mean, sometimes pain interferes with sleep.
Will keep you from falling asleep.
Yeah. But, you know, certainly it's a plausible anti-inflammatory. It contains some of the ingredients of ache action. Which is a product that I use for, you know, aches and pains,
It's a nice product. It's got willow bark.
Yeah. It's got ginger and it's got Boswellia and it's got white willow bark, which is kind of the natural source of the salicylates that in synthetic form are aspirin. So it is really anti-inflammatory. And, you know, but there's no claim that that's going to help you sleep. But, you know, by inference, if you're achy, maybe it'll help.
Yeah. Yeah. I can't imagine, you know, I love ginger. I love to make ginger tea. It's nice. I like the bite, the spiciness of it. It's also very good for immunity.
Mm-hmm.
And we know Boswellia for years is a wonderful anti-inflammatory. It's helped a lot of people with any kind of pain syndromes and things.
Yeah.
It's also important to look at, Sandy, it's also important to look at what you may be eating or what you may be doing or drinking or anything else that may be causing you aches, pains, or trouble with sleep. You want to start with the low-hanging fruit. If you're having trouble sleeping, are you drinking caffeinated beverages all day long? Are you having too much coffee or tea that's not decaffeinated? Are you having energy drinks? What's happening there?
Again, you know, I think people have been trained to look for relief from sleep problems in a pill form mm-hmm. because of, you know, we have pharmaceutical sleeping pills. So then people are then conditioned to look for non-pharmaceutical sleeping pills. And that's just, that's all, you know, these things can help, but you really need, as you say, a comprehensive approach to sleep. Do you remember a patient who came to see us who said, you know, we taught, she had sleep problems. We taught her sleep hygiene, you know, which is like the principles of, you know, keep the room cool and, you know, go to sleep at the same time and, you know, have distractions, no low TV.
Yeah.
And she was actually a real test case for that because she said, oh, that was great. It was really great. And I said, well, why are you having sleep problems again? She says, well, I stopped doing all these things. I kept, you know, now I watch TV till late at night in my bed.
Right.
You know what? I said, well, I guess you have to just go back to all these recommendations that we made for you earlier.
Exactly. Yeah. So it's nice when it can be that simple.
Yeah.
As well as just some sleep hygiene and get your circadian rhythms back in line. It is.
Get some light in your face in the morning and your eyes.
Exactly.
You know,
get some sun on your face.
Yeah. Yep.
You know, open up the curtains, the blinds, everything. Get the light in there.
Yep.
Exactly. And the less artificial light that we're having to use after it's dark outside, the better off we are. And then a natural sleep time sets in. And listen, everybody, if that's as early as 9:30 or 10 o'clock, that's okay. Go to bed. You don't want a second wind.
Yeah.
Don't wait for a second wind. You don't want that.
No, that's something that I try to observe because lately it's been fairly easy because, some of the
summer
New York teams that I follow, they're on pretty late at night. Like I just watched the New York Jets, unfortunately, play the San Francisco 49ers. It was a West Coast game, so it was on late on the East Coast. And, you know, I pretty much made a decision after the first half that I wasn't going to miss anything by going to sleep early and missing that pretty abysmal second half. There was no danger that I would miss some dramatic moments where Aaron Rodgers was going to pull out an amazing come from behind victory. So anyway.
Yeah. And listen, there are some things that are worth staying up for, obviously.
Oh.
As long as we're not doing this every night.
The debates. The debates are, that's like,
Your
popcorn. Yeah. Grab your popcorn. Yeah.
I know. Why do these things start at 9 o'clock? I start getting sleepy at 9:23. Anyway, we'll see what happens. Okay.
Yeah. Whatever. So this is a good time, I think, to allow one of our sponsors an opportunity to share an important message with you, don't you think, Layla?
Yes, absolutely.
So let's give it a go. Listen up. Whether you're a nutrition enthusiast or simply an individual looking to improve your well-being, check out this comprehensive new course from the American Nutrition Association, Getting Started with Personalized Nutrition. It's a self-paced one-hour course with video, reference sheets, and more, all with the goal of helping you harness the power of personalized nutrition. You'll learn how to optimize your energy levels, support your mental clarity, improve your GI function, enhance your physical performance, and maintain your metabolic health. The course is regularly $49, but as an Intelligent Medicine listener, you can get access to this vital content for just $29. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman. That's the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the exclusive discount. The ANA believes personalized nutrition holds the greatest potential to solve the chronic disease epidemic. Just go to the ANA.org/Hoffman and use coupon code Hoffman29 for the Harness the Power of Personalized Nutrition course. Thanks for listening, and thanks for supporting our sponsors. They, of course, are What Make Intelligent Medicine continuing free resource to you. And now back to our questions. What's up?
Okay. We've got an email from Marlene. Dear Dr. Hoffman and Layla, thank you for working so hard to educate us listeners about health and nutrition in such a clear, concise, yet entertaining manner. Thank you, Marlene.
Oh, but it's precisely our mission. Precisely our mission statement.
Right.
You've really nicely encapsulated. Clear, concise, and entertaining.
And entertaining. Here we are. Here we be. It's been illuminating and life-changing, and it's amazing to me how you have known about this information many years before others who act as though the data is brand new. Yeah, things take a long time to change in the health and medicine field. What, on average, 17 years before an idea or something that's been proven is finally embraced?
Yeah, I really feel gratified by that. And as a sideline, you know, I wrote an article a couple of weeks ago about sort of some things that I called right from almost the beginning of my career, you know, in the 80s and 90s, that now have become really vindicated by the march of time and by subsequent research and, you know, a newfound recognition that, you know, we're on the right track. So anyway.
Yeah, yeah. Marlene writes, do either of you have a favorite Mediterranean diet cookbook or website. My family's finally switching to this lifestyle and we need help. Thank you. Marlene, first of all, kudos to you and your family for upregulating your lifestyle to eating more whole, unprocessed, good food, aka the Mediterranean diet you speak of.
Right.
Now, having said that, I believe in our country, the Mediterranean diet has been bastardized to resemble the government's My Plate, which used to be the food diet pyramid, which is based on a whole lot of grains and breads and pastas and low-fat things like dairy. There is nowhere in a true Mediterranean diet where anyone is eating any low-fat dairy, I promise you.
Yeah.
Go to France, go to Greece, go to Spain, go to Italy. There's no low-fat dairy that people are, oh, look, low-fat dairy. And the alcohol is another matter entirely, I would say.
Right.
Because alcohol, we know, and we're finding out even more and more, is more troublesome, is more of a neurotoxin than we believed. And, oh, but a glass of red wine with dinner. Well, we thought the medicinal dose of red wine was about 3.5 ounces Monday, Wednesday, Friday only, which is not a lot, right? That's a total of about 21 tablespoons of wine, if you wanted to get really particular. But even that much, you need the amount of resveratrol that was done in the resveratrol studies and the mouse studies. You would have to drink 500 bottles of wine to get the benefits, which is ridiculous. Obviously, take a resveratrol pill, take a supplement. That would be the way to go. I don't see, other than the grape grown in Sardinia, I forget the type of grape it is, that's got a little more resveratrol than maybe some of the other grapes. But I don't think it's worth, for anyone who is not a drinker, I never have recommended in my entire career that they take up drinking some red wine.
And that's been debunked now.
Not ever.
If you want to drink, okay, and actually there may be some, look, I mean, there's some lifestyle and social benefits. It's not all about, you know, living to be 120, you know, like, I'm going to have dinner with some friends tonight and I might order a glass of wine or have a glass of beer or even a cocktail, you know, it's kind of, it's a social lubricant, you know, not that I need it.
But wait, let me interject here because lately on the news, I saw, you know, a French woman who's 103 drinking a snifter of brandy and donning a cigarette in her other hand. So, you know, here we are. She's over 100.
Well, I mean, if she hadn't been doing that, she could have lived to 140. Oh, so while you were while you're talking about the Mediterranean diet, I just Googled America's favorite Mediterranean diet restaurant, which is, drum roll, please, Olive Garden, right?
Oh, stop.
Okay.
Oh, no.
So here's some of their classic entrees, okay? Chicken Alfredo, which is like this, there's some chicken there, but it's like in a gooey white sauce with a lot of pasta.
Is that the one that comes with the unlimited breadsticks?
Always unlimited breadsticks, but including the unlimited breadsticks, it's 1,570 calories. There's also chicken parmesan. Actually, I like chicken parmesan. It's very good.
I love chicken parmesan.
1,020 calories.
I like veal parmesan better. Yeah.
Then there's shrimp Alfredo, which is whenever you put, you know, even some protein with a lot of like thick noodles and like a thick sauce. It's 1,470 calories. This is a family style thing. The family style lasagna bundle that serves 4 to 6 is 6,700 calories. And so everything is as if pasta and thick, you know, creamy sauces were a thing. And very few vegetables in this. I don't see hardly any vegetables except for tomato sauce.
Maybe a little eggplant
appetizers, you know, you would think would be in like a nice salad, but instead it's fried mozzarella with 800 calories, calamari, fried, of course, 670 calories. So, you know, this is our bastardization, as you say, of the traditional Mediterranean diet. So
I think the worst part, I think the most heinous part besides that, Dr. Hoffman,
cultural appropriation,
is that insisting that it's low fat.
Yeah.
It is not low fat. Let me.
That the traditional Mediterranean diet is low fat. Yeah, exactly. Right.
No. It's not.
Yeah.
A true Mediterranean diet hovers around 40% fat.
Mm-hmm.
Now, consider a low fat diet, which hovers around 30% fat,
right,
with only 10% of that being saturated,
right,
fat. A Mediterranean diet is 40% fat.
Yeah.
Fat is not the fool here in a Mediterranean diet. They're eating lamb chops,
mm-hmm,
and pork loin, and they're eating fish,
yeah,
and they're having lots of olive oil.
Some goats,
you know,
some pork in certain regions.
Yes, and brie, and all of the, right.
Yeah,
right.
Ham, so on. So the point is, what's the best Mediterranean cookbook? And the answer is, I don't know.
I would look for one
that's really replete in fresh, unprocessed foods, that doesn't emphasize the pasta too much, which actually in certain regions of Italy is not that popular as part of the traditional diet.
It's not.
Yep.
In regional Italian dishes, it's one of the first courses, which is much smaller. Your pasta course is actually coming out on a salad plate. That's not the main course.
Mm-hmm.
It's only here where it's become a big bowl of Chef Boyardee or whatever. I learned that
during college, yeah, because I had a friend, he was actually a roommate, and I'm still in touch with him, who also became a doctor, interestingly, but he came from a traditional Italian family, but upscale, mm-hmm, affluent, and so the grandmother, as customarily is the case, lived with the family, with his mother and father.
Yes.
And I went for dinner, and you know, we were hungry freshman college students because we were starving. We had the most a meal that I still remember. And you're right. The pasta came out and they said, well, that's kind of a small portion of pasta. I guess they're on a diet here. And there's like, no, that was like the hors d'oeuvre.
Yes.
Yeah. And then came, uh-huh, the main course. Yeah. It was amazing.
Right. It really is something. So, Marlene, just be careful. Don't pick up a book that's been endorsed by the USDA or, I want to say, anything American. Because
right,
you're going to find something to do with too many grains and a whole lot of low-fat nonsense,
yeah,
which really needs to die,
yeah,
at some point. It's,
yeah,
just been, our epidemics of overweight, obesity, diabetes, this is why this has happened.
Yeah.
You know, the government guidelines on all of this, I don't believe government has any business telling us how to eat. It's got to be completely individual.
This is why, you know, originally I came up with what I call the salad and salmon diet, which is sort of a Mediterranean,
yes,
diet, but it emphasizes, it prohibits flour products.
Yes.
So there's no noodles, there's no pasta, there's no bread, mm-hmm, but you can have some whole grains. Right? And some people do okay,
yeah,
with some whole grains. And I occasionally...
It's reasonable amounts of whole grains, not the 6 to 8 servings they're talking,
right,
about.
Once a week, I'll have a small portion of oatmeal because I feel like it. You know, it's if I'm,
yeah,
you know, going to go for a long bike ride, or, you know, if I have a long, mm-hmm, workout ahead, you know, to have a little something in my stomach,
yeah,
something light. Because, you know, if before a long bike ride, you don't want like bacon and eggs and sausage and, you know, it's like heavy.
It's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. It's kind of heavy. And, yeah, you want to be able to burn the carbs.
Yeah. Yeah.
On your ride, absolutely.
So
there are different ways to eat for different things that you're doing or your lifestyle and all of that. So, yeah, Marlene, concentrate on whole, unprocessed food. Get food the way it came in nature, not after the fat has been stripped away or after anything has been stripped away, just the way that it's found. Don't be afraid of fatty meats, just like we should not be afraid of fatty fish. Because it's the fatty fish that gives us those wonderful omega-3s, like in salmon and sardines and anchovies and tuna. I mentioned tuna last because we're careful about mercury.
And speaking of which, apropos, I was right before this podcast, I was busily at work on my next article. And I'll give you a little bit of a teaser on that. On my radio show last week, I was talking about an article which talked about the anti-inflammatory diet and its beneficial effects. And it was something to the effect of the effects of an anti-inflammatory diet on multimorbidity, which is a great word, fancy. I don't know why they need to use a fancy word, because what it means is multimorbidity means getting sick in every conceivable way. And in 59 different chronic disease outcomes, an anti-inflammatory diet was beneficial at slowing or preventing the onset of these 59 conditions, you know, ranging from, you know, brain conditions to cancer, cardiovascular disease, renal disease, liver disease, you know, you name it. Probably also mental, you know, psychiatric disease, you know, it's so many different ways. Anti-inflammatory diet. So what is an anti-inflammatory diet? It's avoiding precisely the things you've been talking about, you know, the all the bad carbs and ultra processed foods.
Yeah.
But they also include red meat as a pro-inflammatory food. And I said, that doesn't sound right. And I said that on the air, and I said, and I made a mental note, I'm going to like look for the scientific substantiation of that, because it's part of the gospel that red meat is inflammatory and you should reduce your red meat, reduce your red meat.
Yeah.
It's a mantra. You know, don't
it's
eat red meat.
Oh, I gave up red meat. I only eat chicken now.
Because
why?
It's now how in the world it could be pro-inflammatory, I don't know. And I'm looking at the science in an article that's going to be in our newsletter next week. And I got to tell you that the science does not substantiate a link to red meat and inflammation per se. Mm-hmm. Now, if you're Morgan Spurlock and you know, you're undertaking an experiment where you try to eat as many McDonald's as you can while ordering everything else from the menu, you could
supersizing it.
You're supersizing everything. Red meat could be part of the problem. But
red meat came along for the ride.
Exactly.
With all the French fries
and
the burger buns and the who knows what.
Precisely.
Yeah.
So you know, it's got a bad rep. Anyway, we'll tackle that in future newsletters. That's one of the reasons why, you know, we answer questions that I think are news that you can use questions. And often, I got to say, misrepresented in the mainstream media and also, unfortunately, misrepresented even in very prominent medical journals. So we've got to be,
it's true,
you know,
discerning
about the science that we base our lifestyle and diets on. Okay.
Absolutely.
Next question.
Oh, we've got one from Andy. Hi, Dr. Hoffman. Thank you for your wonderful advice over the many years I've listened to your program. I recently learned of a, quote, new product that was invented in 1870. Methylene blue. It's an FDA-approved chemical that's being used off-label for its anti-aging effects. I'm 75. I'm a 75-year-old male.
Right.
Is this something I should consider in my daily regimen?
I've known about methylene blue from the first time that I took any kind of a science class in junior high school, because methylene blue is a stain that has been used to stain cells so that cells appear more, you can see the structures within cells.
Yeah.
So methylene blue is a commonly used dye, and it'll really pick up the structures within cells. You know, you can see the cell membranes and you can see the nucleus, especially the nucleus will light up. And so it is a valuable tool in microscopy. End of story. Well, it turns out that methylene blue is a pretty potent antioxidant. And it's coming into vogue as an anti-aging treatment. Now, I don't know. It's one of those things that's on my radar screen. But it also, see, apparently it has something, it also has a medical role. It's used to treat something called... Go ahead.
Malaria?
Yeah. Why it is it seems to protect the cells from the effects of oxygen deprivation. And there's something called methemoglobinemia, for which methylene blue can be used. So the thought is that it's got some benefits for protecting the red blood cells. So I think it's been extrapolated as an anti-aging drug. Study here, the potentials of methylene blue as an anti-aging drug They say, yes, indeed, it's used in for malaria and for this condition of methemoglobinemia. It has to do with protecting the mitochondria. So, yeah, it works on some of the energy complexes within the mitochondria, which are the energy powerhouses of the cells, blah, blah, blah. And so there's potential. I think it's more hypothetical. There's some preclinical studies. And so, it's one of those things that I think needs to be studied. So I'm not going to weigh in on that. I'm not going to take it either. I'm I'm a little younger than this guy, but, you know, I also have anti-aging on my mind. But I don't want to take stuff willy-nilly on spec that might be at best worthless and at worst harmful.
It wouldn't be the first thing to, it wouldn't be the first thing on my list either.
I mean, I'm placing my bets on, you know, safer, more reliable anti-aging strategies. I'm not on the RAPA train yet for rapamycin. I'm not yet, taking metformin, you know, which is one of the proposed anti-aging things, but it's controversial. It's not entirely sure that it has a benefit in humans. But other things, I mean, I just mentioned astragalus, and astragalus, you know, recent study, you know, it's known to be something that has immune benefits. And it's one of the reasons I take it, is to support immunity. And, you know, there's immunosenescence and there's stuff going around, and, you know, I want to support my immune system. But it also, in a recent study, was shown to prevent the shortening of telomeres, which is an age-related, it's a marker of aging. Now, I don't think telomeres are the end-all and be-all of aging, and I think there are newer techniques of measuring age effects in humans other than measuring telomeres. But I think it's a, you know, there's some promising signs there, and, you know, I was taking it anyway, so I'm encouraged to take it, as, you know, maybe it'll have some benefits. But, you know, taking a thing that stains you blue, I mean, you might live longer, but you're going to look like a Smurf.
Right? I think that's what happens to people who take colloidal silver for a long time.
Wait, did you see the opening ceremony of the Olympics? I think that guy was taking methylene blue.
I thought you were going to say, did you see that guy on Oprah years ago?
That was when people were taking silver, and he took too much silver. You also turned blue with that. But there was a dancing Smurf.
I didn't see the opening ceremonies, no.
It was controversial because they thought, like, you know, what's going on here? It's like, yikes. Anyway.
Anyhow. All right. So, Andy, thank you for that. Take good care of yourself. 75 years young. That's fantastic.
Yeah, it's all good.
All right. Oh, we've got a question here from Dennis. Good morning. I caught your show on a station in La Crosse, Wisconsin.
That's one of our affiliates. They're pretty active affiliate out there in La Crosse. So, shout out to all you cheeseheads out there in Wisconsin.
Right, Dairyland. Yeah.
Yeah.
Dennis says,
"Go Packers. Go Pack.
Go Packers." There you go. On the show, you talked about a memory game, and the kids loved it. Mm-hmm. Could you tell me the name of the game?
I know now. You actually previewed some of these questions with me, and I said, for the life of me, I can't remember. Now I remember. This was a memory game, and if I asked the six-year-old in my family, she would immediately know the answer. It's a memory game where you have adult versions and baby versions of animals, and there's a pairing of each. So there's like a baby lion and an adult lion, and there's a baby seal and an adult seal, and on through the animal kingdom. And you place the cards face down, and you then have to pair them. So at your turn, you flip one over, and then you try to flip another one over for a match. And usually at the beginning, you have no idea because you shuffle the cards. But eventually, you remember where the cards were, and you make the matches. Now, for the life of me, I forget the name of the game, but it's I was absolutely annihilated by a six-year-old, so much so that she took pity on me and she helped me. And I still lost. So I told her mom and dad about that experience, and they just rolled their eyes and they said that that happens to them too. That which suggests that there's something about the focus and concentration of kids and their really sharp short-term memory that declines. I mean, we know that our short-term memory really does decline at a certain point, but I'm not that worried about it because I think what makes up for it is our ability to synthesize and to see the big picture. For example, I just heard of a guy, he's the oldest known medical student. So how old is he? He's 70 years old and he just started medical school. He's a wealthy Korean businessman who decided to go to medical school.
Wow.
So the problem is, like, you invest a lot of time and effort and society invests a lot of time and effort to train you, right? Because it costs a lot and the government subsidizes medical schools. And then what? You've got a career of like maybe 10 years, but the point being is, I don't know that I would have cut it, with all the memorization that's required in medical school.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe I would have a better handle on it because it was just rote memory. I didn't know why I was memorizing it. Now it's more like relevant, like, oh, wow. Now I know that. Oh, this biochemical pathway about amino acids has some relevance to, what happens when I have a protein shake, mm-hmm. I understand it better. Mm-hmm.
Right. It's a connect the dots. It's also the brain is going to focus on the more salient, mm-hmm. more important things, the things that are more germane and be a little more selective that way. I think it also has to do with all the other details in our lives and what's important to remember and what can kind of fall away without much consequence. We have to consider that too. Or am I just rationalizing, Dr. Hoffman?
But this is a point I want to make too, is a broader point, which is I'm just looking this up here. There are several games around this. One of them is called Mama and Baby. Okay. It's a baby animals matching. I think if you just look up, matching game baby, it's mama and baby animals. Okay. And I think that's the name of the game, but it's a really good, game.
Sounds fun.
Yeah. But anyway, so the point, coming back to the actual point is they've actually, studied whether, games or say watching Jeopardy, or doing Wordle, various interventions like that, whether it actually helps to slow the onset of dementia. And the results have been controversial. And it really, kind of like, it's like a muscle, like, if you don't use your,
it's like exercise, but for the brain,
use it or lose it. But the results have been kind of controversial on that because there is, definitely a potential for people to get better at the games. But part of that is, that was the first time I played that game. If I play that game every single day and I knew the characters, the animals, and I kind of mm-hmm. got a little methodology for, in my mind, placing the cards in different places and, came up with strategy, it would appear that I was getting smarter, but I was just getting more familiar with the game. What is unequivocally true is that the best way to retain your memory and avoid cognitive decline is physical exercise.
Yes. Because it promotes the production of BDNF.
Yep.
Brain-derived neurotrophic factor. Very, very important. And particularly aerobic exercise as well.
Yeah.
So, exercise, eating right, all of this, getting quality sleep. When we don't sleep well, we have trouble remembering things.
Yep.
It takes a toll on our short-term memory because if we're not sleeping well or we're under a lot of stress that's causing us to not sleep well, a high level of cortisol over a period of time is known to shrink the hippocampus. That is the memory center of the brain.
Right.
We're responsible for at least encoding and for short-term memory retention.
Yep.
You don't want a shrunken hippocampus.
Exactly. And this is concerning when it comes to kids, is there are several studies that show that excessive use of social media actually will shrink the hippocampus and will shrink the amygdala, which is the emotional center of the brain. There's a disturbing study that just out that shows that the average size of the cerebral cortex, the gray matter, mm-hmm. in kids, they measured it in, I don't know how they performed the study. They did it pre and post COVID. And what they found is that on average, kids' gray matter is decreasing in volume around the pandemic. And they theorize that part of it, and it's more pronounced in girls than in boys. And the theory is that girls are more dependent on social interaction than boys. Boys can be lone wolves more easily than girls, who depend on social interaction for brain development. They're more mm-hmm. gregarious by nature, you know, probably hormonal. Mm-hmm. That is a concern, is that, the effects of isolation, too, can have a, you know, loneliness, they say, is the new smoking in some circles. And, social isolation is a risk factor for cognitive decline, too. So,
And as everyone has become more and more isolated, which is now a known risk. Even in they talk about the blue zones and things like that. And I know a lot of that, I won't get into it here because we're nearing the end of the podcast here, but multi-generational living, that kind of family support, people are not alone. They're not lonely. They feel supported. Even if you're not getting along with some family members and their rifts mm-hmm. and this and that, you have that soft place to fall.
Yeah.
That is your community, your support network.
Right.
And this is always family. Sometimes they're very close friends.
And it's actually
dynamite.
It's actually fairly unique in the animal kingdom, although it is also present among whales and among elephants, is that you have that third generation. Because, look, frankly, after we reproduce, what's our purpose? You know, we've sown our seed and, you know, we've perpetuated the species so we can die, you know, just like sometimes insects mate and then they die. You know, it's like the life of a mayfly or something. But
3 days or
there is an importance to, even in our non-reproductive years, to being alive. And humans have that capacity. And that is thought to be something that evolution has favored because of the benefits that accrue to the offspring, that it frees time for the mother and father to, you know, do economically productive things, you know, hunt and forage. And it also is a way of perpetuating whatever wisdom can be imparted from, you know, the senior generation to the, you know, future generations, you know, the role of grandparents.
Yeah. Yeah.
But more and more, I think older people are being marginalized from that because, you know, kids move away, you know, it's harder to stay in touch mm-hmm. with your kids. You know, you become estranged and, you know, you see your grandkids on Zoom, you know, once a week.
Right. Which is great, but not the same.
Yeah.
It's true. Yeah. But at least there's that. Well, many, anyway.
So anyway, so just a reminder, mm-hmm. on a happier note, we have a sale going on, so take advantage of the sale. It's September 17th and 18th, 2 days only, mm-hmm. where you'll get 10% off and free shipping on my entire inventory of top supplements at drhoffmanstore.com. That's from the FullScript website, where buying through FullScript offers fast free shipping, as well as quality products that are carefully vetted for potency and safety. And you can get it on the 17th and 18th, so stock up now. Layla, I think that's about it for today.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. Want to remind everyone, questions@drhoffman.net. That's questions@drhoffman.net. We appreciate your questions. Thank you.
Indeed we do. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I want to thank you for listening to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. Follow us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or your favorite podcast app, and get new episodes automatically downloaded every weekday. And please give us a rating and review. It truly helps new people discover Intelligent Medicine. The Intelligent Medicine Podcast is for general informational purposes only and does not constitute the practice of medicine, nursing, or other professional healthcare services, including the giving of medical advice, and no doctor-patient relationship is formed. The use of information on this podcast or materials linked from this podcast is at the user's own risk. The content of this podcast is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Users should not disregard or delay in obtaining medical advice for any medical condition they may have and should seek the assistance of their healthcare professionals for any such conditions. Finally, please visit drhoffman.com and discover everything Intelligent Medicine has to offer, including frequently updated, unbiased health news, and fully vetted product and supplement recommendations.
This is Layla Mudin, registered dietitian nutritionist. I maintain a private practice and see patients regularly. If you require a nutrition consult with me but live out of town, there's no need to travel to New York City. I have telephone and telehealth consultations with clients from all over the country. Please visit drhoffman.com for more information. And to set up an appointment, call 212-779-1744. That's 212-779-1744. I look forward to being a collaborator in your healthcare.